What is up, flock and friends? It is another edition of your Flamingo Podcast, Talking Flock. I'm your host, Rob Chappell, and joining me today on a somber occasion, we have a moment of silence for the man, the myth, the legend, Evan Warwick. How you doing, Evan?
Good. Thank you for having me on, Rob. It's very much bittersweet, but yeah. We're celebrating. It's not somber yet.
Okay. It's not ready yet. We'll get to the what's to celebrate, because it was at the match Thursday night, and which we'll talk about the match. The match has us all in a very good mood.
Yes.
But during the first half, I was sort of wandering the far side from the bleachers, and I discovered there's behind the big video board. This is one of my all-time great tweets. Behind the video board is a couch.
There is.
Which I thought was hilarious for some reason.
Yes, the Madison Partners Lounge, famous for its couch and singular TV.
I didn't know what it was or who it was for. Yeah. I was like, oh, there's a couch here. Uh-huh. And I tweeted a photo of the couch. 10 minutes later, probably, I'm down at the end line where I usually hang out trying to catch video. And Evan comes walking right up to me. And usually during games, Evan is like going between. He's in the press box. He's running. He's on the radio. He's talking. So when I see you walking toward me, I know you're going to talk to me about something. Mm-hmm. And honest to God, my thought was you were going to tell me like, hey, they don't want pictures of the couch on Twitter. I don't know why I thought that or why anybody would care about the couch, but like I thought it was some sort of like secret lounge that I accidentally tweeted pictures of, and I was like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble. But that's not what it was.
No, you unlock the secret of Breeze, but it's not a secret. It's no one ever goes back there except for
nobody cares. Right, it's a secret nobody cares about.
Right, exactly.
But what you were approaching me to tell me is that it was your last game with the club.
It was, yeah. So it was very bittersweet, of course, right? 3 long years with the club, but kind of decided personally that. This was kind of the last game and I needed kind of the space to, seek future opportunities wherever they may be. And I approached Connor and we had a great conversation about it and, kind of decided about a succession plan and all that kind of stuff and the transition over of my position. And so obviously Connor's been nothing but wonderful. The staff been nothing but wonderful. And it's, incredibly sad to leave such a great place. But from a soccer career perspective, I thought it was, the move that I needed to make to kind of future my development in American soccer.
And that's what I wanted to ask about. I don't think you know specifically what's next yet, do you?
Yeah.
I mean, you said you had a couple irons in the fire.
Yep, irons in the fire. Nothing to like really speak definitively on yet. As you know, soccer is a very small but mighty world and
right.
We'll see what pans out. But I'll everyone will be the first to know as soon as something comes up.
We'll have you back on. But you do want, but soccer is where you want to be, right? That's like
absolutely. Soccer is where I want to be. And if it ends up being something else, great. But I never knew what's working in soccer would be like until, coming to Forward and working in the front office. And you catch this kind of bug in the best way possible of you get kind of addicted in a way to working for a team and working for such a great environment. And it's hard to leave that, in any respect. I think I'm a soccer lifer at this point.
Awesome. Now, let's talk a little bit about your backstory because folks may not even remember you were just in the flock end at the beginning of this, right? Like you were a fan.
I came late. Like that first year, I think I maybe went to one game and that was only because a friend of mine was like, hey, you should come out to a Forward game. And I thought, yeah, well, why not? And, attended it, had a great time. And then I think it was towards the end of that first season. And so I was like, man, I gotta come to more games next season. Uh-huh. And I think that first season, that was my first year out of college. I was still really broke, trying to pay off student debt. And while games are still affordable, it was like I was working like a dog at a car dealership, and so I didn't have much time on my hands. And so that second year is when I really started to invest in the club, go to a lot of matches, and find out a lot about lower league soccer. Because I was always a fan of the Prem, I was always a Southampton fan myself. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so a lot of my time was devoted to that. And then I was like, man, I've I've wanted a hometown team to root for my entire life. I was a Chicago Fire fan, and so that was rather tumultuous and difficult at times, as you can imagine. But it was like, it's sitting right in front of me. I should really invest in it. And so that second year is when I really caught that.
The second year was the COVID year, right? So did you go to Wauwatosa?
Yeah, I mean, I went to as many games in Wauwatosa as I could. It was weird, though. Like, it wasn't that breeze experience. At the club will tell you that, right? I mean, they had to do what they had to do. But yeah, I mean, like, even that Wauwatosa year, like, you still had – it's still Ford Madison, and you still fell in love with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then – Kuba was in your job, and then Jason Klein. Mm-hmm. I think Jason was still there when we started the podcast. Is that true?
Yeah, I think
you were in the Carl Craig year, beginning of 2021.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. And so Kuba left to explore other ventures earlier in the year. And then mm-hmm. Jason left to explore law school. And mm-hmm. They opened up the position. It was open for a long, long time. I didn't even think of applying for it, to be honest. It was off my radar. I was at the Alumni Association at the time, working in their marketing department for the Wisconsin Alumni. And, one thing led to another. And at the time, and this is where it gets weird, I was during the pandemic, I was playing a lot of FIFA, as anyone did during the pandemic, because there's nothing else to do. And I was like, man, I should reach out to Jason and Kuba and just like see if they need like an esports player. Cause like I was like trying to put myself in their shoes, and like they're doing podcasts, they're doing like coffee hour with Connor, you know, like just like any content they could possibly get their hands on. They were doing a great job at it, but what content can you create if your club isn't playing soccer, you know? And so I was like, hey, I can play FIFA. I can like create a series around it, and I can't guarantee it's going to get any engagement whatsoever, but I'll like, you know, do the work and put in the work. And they're like, yeah, sick. Awesome. Like, doesn't hurt us, because either you get zero engagement, or it like takes off. Either way, it's fine for us. So
yeah,
my introduction to the club, and that fast forward into, so I did that for like a year or two. Fast forward into Jason leaving the job and a couple months down the road, and Jason's like, yeah, you should apply for it. And I was like, okay, yeah, might as well. Cause I was pretty happy at the Alumni Association at the time, and threw my name into the hat, and Connor called me up, and he's like, let's do an interview. And a week later I had the job. And so it was pretty nuts. And
when was that? That would have been 2021, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, got it midway through the season. Mm-hmm. And that's also, at the time, I was learning from Cassidy. So Cassidy was still at the club, and she was on her way out to explore other stuff too. And so it's really cool, because I got to learn a little bit from Kuba as he was transitioning out. I got to learn a lot from Jason from the social media side of the house, and then a lot from Cassidy from game presentation. And so it was like all the people that the club, built the club, so to speak, alongside Connor, mm-hmm. really taught me like everything I know about Ford Madison, and taught me how to continue on what they built. I think that was the main thing that everyone wanted to see, is even though they were moving on to different positions, they didn't want everything they built to die. You know, they wanted it to continue. They wanted it to flourish, but in like new ways. And so I thought that was a really cool way to kind of be introduced into the club and my role. And that first year was all social media and press box. And it was tough, because Jason is a legend on social media.
Yeah.
Kind of follow such a legend was really difficult to kind of create my own mark in that, as the team was losing a lot of games at the time.
And you, that has to make it more difficult, but Ford Madison, before they ever took the field, was known as a social media brand.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, I mean, you look at Connor and his background, right? Like, you know, huge journalism guy, and like, you know, Mallard's lifer, and then Ford, like, clearly knows what he's doing and clearly knows how to build a club, and could saw an in with American soccer on a digital side of the house, where like American teams weren't that popular on digital, and we're like, hey, let's break the mold a little bit and be non-traditional and actually talk to fans, you know, like conversate with fans. And that's where Jason was so good. He was just so personable and funny and organic and authentic. Like, I think there's a lot to learn from any profession about the way that Jason approached his job.
Yeah. But yeah, you obviously had some big shoes to step into, and you did. Mm-hmm. Now this league is thinks of itself, and third tier thinks of itself as sort of developmental league for the players. And we talked a little bit about developmental league for the coaches. Sadly, developmental league for the referees sometimes. But what about front office? Is this are you seeing people come in, like yourself coming in, getting the taste of it, being like, okay, I want to do this for real, and now I'm going to move up or move on? Or is that common?
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think it's a developmental league, but I also think it's like, man, like you look at any of the front office people in Ford Madison or across USL League One, like I know we have this bitter rivalry with Omaha, right? But you look like at the front offices and we're actually pretty good friends. Like we really conversate a lot and stuff like that. You plug in any one of our front office people into an MLS side or like a, you know, abroad, you know, going abroad. And I have full faith that anyone would be able to do great things. I think it's just, it's developmental in the sense that it gives you a taste of American soccer on the lower leagues, and you're expected to do a lot, you know, like as director of, digital or public relations, like I've been in the past, like you're not just doing those things. You are wiping seat backs on a game day. You're getting the press box ready. You're printing everything out. Like it's truly like an all hands on deck kind of experience. And it's perfect in the sense of a lot of us had not worked in sports before coming to Forward. I think most of us in the front office had not come from a sports background. And so it teaches you all about events, teaches you about sports. And I really think it teaches you about adaptability because of how crazy sports are in terms of really not knowing what the day-to-day is going to look like. And for me, that's right. Like some people hate that. Some people want their routine. I don't want that. And I think a lot of the Ford Madison staff thrive under the every day is different kind of philosophy.
Yeah. And so much of your life depends on those 11 guys on the field, what they can do in 90 minutes. Like there's no other business quite like that. Yeah. You know, I'm reminded when you said that about wiping seatbacks. In 2005, mm-hmm. I wrote a profile of the Mallards for Madison mm-hmm. Magazine. It was on the business of sports, so it was about the business side of the Mallards when they had only been around like 5 years.
Sure.
And the opening of the piece was Steve Schmidt, the owner, mm-hmm. changing light bulbs at the duck pond.
Right.
And the idea being, you know, like that everybody pitches in however they can is just part of the culture of the big top sports organization, which if folks don't know, owns the Mallards, owns Fort Madison, is at least a stake in the Milwaukee team. Mm-hmm. So, but you kind of indicate that that's kind of how lower league soccer is everywhere. Like all the clubs are kind of like that, where everybody's just pitching and doing whatever.
Right. And it's sharing intel across clubs throughout the league. Like we're not stingy with, you know, sharing our match day experience. Like One Knox is a great example. Like Knox came into the league this year and, you know, we're good friends with their front office and we're constantly on calls with them or helping them out in terms of their first, like, we want to see other teams succeed. Their success helps our success, you know?
And
we know that we're not dumb to the fact that we're third tier of American soccer. And we see, like, I mean, you look at leagues across, not even soccer, but just across sports in America, and they're ebbing and flowing up and down all the time. And we're no different than that. And so we kind of have to band together as a league almost to create a one of a kind unique experience that rivals any soccer in America. And, you know, 5,000 screaming fans at Breeze, it's no Mercedes-Benz Superdome or anything like that, but it's, like, you go to Breeze and you get an experience that is one of a kind and, you know, truly unique to Madison. And that's what every city in USL League One aims to provide, you know?
Yeah. Right. Can you tell me some of your favorite like promos or just gimmicky things that you guys came up with?
Oh man, there's been, we have like three a week at this point, you know?
Yeah,
I think my favorite that we've come up with, was the Matt Glazer red card pack, which I know had mixed reviews. I know. I just love the nature of it. I remember when Matt got that red and, you know, as a fan, you're like, man, like our coach shouldn't be getting a red. But from a front office perspective, like we know Matt, like Matt is the chillest guy in the office. Like he's always coming in, joking around with everyone, like playing pranks on everyone. And it's just like an absolute joy to be around. And so when he got a red, we're like, oh, we got to have fun with this. Cause like he gets at us from time to time, we got to get at him, you know? And so we wanted the fans to connect with us, but more so it was just a joke. You know, we were like, let's just do a pack with everything red in it. and get back at Matt. And we told him we were going to do it, and he laughed at it. And he's like, "Are you sure? Are you sure?" We're like, "No, yeah, we think it's going to go over well." And it went over fine, but it's just one of those things where we don't take our, I mean, like, no one at Forward takes themselves too seriously, and that's the fun of it. Is like, we're not,
it's a game.
There's no MLS guidelines to go about. It's Tyler will text us, or we'll text Connor, and we'll be like, "Hey, here's this stupid idea. Let's go with it." And then we just do it. There's no like hoops to jump around. It just goes. So that was a favorite. Oh man, there's been too many. I would say this year, I'm trying to think. Oh, the moms or the dads in love with football. The DILF night. Mm-hmm. That was good. We were gonna do some like hyper aggressive billboards with that, and got down by the ad company. They didn't really like what we were doing with that one. They thought it would be too aggressive on the highway to see that as you're driving your car. We saved a couple car crashes, I will say. So
I didn't want to imagine what you mean by aggressive.
Yeah, it'll forever stay in the archives. I'll just say that. but no, I mean, like, it's truly, and that speaks to like, I'll say our like creative department at Forward is kind of one of a kind in the sense that you have Will Jenkins, yeah, as creative director. I mean, he could be a creative director literally anywhere, and then you have Noah, who started as an intern, and has worked his way up to like a content producer and does great work. And then we have Tommy, who's an intern who started with USL League One. I think the talent in graphics and the talent in video and photo that Forward has right now, along with like our media partners like yourself, and then all of our photographers that come on a game day basis, like, truly, you don't see that across lower league soccer at all. Like, the amount of support that you have from a digital experience for photo, video, and, you know, reporting, it's just, you don't realize how lucky you are, you know, to have such
experience. And how much Connor and Vern and everybody in the front office understand that the game experience, those 90 minutes on the field, is the core product, right? But there's so much more ancillary to that in the digital world and social media and in multimedia that adds value to the brand, right?
Yep.
Like, that's just so.
And the one thing I've learned is, like, you go into working for soccer and you think, you know, everything revolves around the result on the field, which to an extent it does. But you also learn that you can't control the results. As much as, like, I want to tackle Chaney, you know, and be like, do something, you know, score a goal. Like, you just got to trust your guys. And at the end of the day, you're going to have losses. You're going to have, like, last year, those bad losing streaks. You're going to have losing seasons. It just happens, you know, like, you could look amazing on paper and it just doesn't pan out. And I think what Big Top does super well is they kind of insulate themselves from that. Like, they want to create an experience that is fun for all, that doesn't matter on the result. Like, you come to a match and we lose like 3-1 and you still go away smiling at the end of the night because you saw Lionel Bessi, you know, do the first kick and then poop on the field and someone have to shovel it off. or just like, you know, just weird one-offs, like meeting Stanley from The Office, you know, just like these out of the box ideas that really are the heartbeat of Forward. That's the one beauty of Forward, is they've never lost course of who they are. You know, it's always been quirky. It's always been fun. And we're 5 years in and we're still doing the same stuff.
I am reminded also of the there was a preseason friendly against a college team. Who was it?
We played DePaul. We played
DePaul. I know there's somebody from Chicago. It's DePaul. And that was the first time I got to see this new group. Mm-hmm. And before the match, I mean, this is in early March, probably, maybe late February even. And before the match, like, most of the front office staff was building a snow throne.
Correct.
Yep. and you're in the press box, and I remember you being on the radio, and I expecting to hear like, "Hey guys, we got to get, you know, got to get ready for the game," whatever. And you were like, "I think it needs a little bit more on the left hand side."
Yeah, and then I think I texted directing the building from "Hey, the post game interviews are not going to take place in the Forward Club. They're going to be on the snow throne that we built."
Right. Yeah, which is fantastic. Just,
you know, it's DIY soccer. It is gritty. It is it's not sexy, but it gets the job done. And it's Madison. It's who we are. It's not, we're not pretending to be someone we're not, you know? So, and right. I don't think it's going to change. I really don't.
Yeah, no, that's great. I love it. Now we are going to, I mean, the soccer landscape will change. It'll almost have to change a little bit with the, you know, if USL Super League has is it has aspires to become top tier, mm-hmm. right? Tier one, whatever that means with USSF.
Right.
but do you think this company with additional investors, but it's still going to be the big top company, right?
Right.
Bringing a top tier club to Madison. Mm-hmm. First of all, a two part question for you. First of all, will that have to, that sense of fun have to change? Will we have to become serious soccer with capital S or whatever?
Right.
Or will the two identities be separate enough where like the women's team will be super serious and Fort Madison will be the goofball, the goofy yeah. team or whatever? Or, and second part of the question is, can we pull it off? Can we get the stadium to 8,000 seats? Can we sell 8,000 tickets?
Mm-hmm.
For women's soccer, do you think? You know the market
right
as well as anybody right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with that second part. Is it possible? Absolutely. And I think it's like the cool part of my job is I get to see the behind the scenes, right? And so yeah. we had that women's announcement several months ago.
Yep.
And you know, I talk to people now, and they're like, "Well, you guys haven't like said much in that time." And I'm like, "Well, that's truthful. Like, you know, there's not much to be said, right? There's work.
Yeah, we gotta wait.
There's
yeah.
not news, but." From my perspective, like I get to see Connor and Vern and the Big Top group, like in the office every single day working on that kind of stuff, like in meetings with several different partners throughout the community with the league, like making sure they're doing everything they can to bring women's soccer to Madison. And I think that like, that's the difference from being in a front office to being a fan is like, you don't get to see that behind the scenes. You don't get right. to understand that work. And a lot of fans are like, yeah, we trust the process. And for me, I'm like, I trust it because I see it. You know,
you
like
know
I see it every single day.
And you're in the process,
putting
yeah.
in, right? And yep. I see like Connor not sleeping at night because of how much, you know, he's trying to bring women's soccer along with this group to Madison. So I absolutely think it's possible. I think it's going to happen. And I think it's going to have its own identity. I think it's going to have its own character. Is it going to be quirky? Is it going to be weird? Is it going to be like flamingos? I don't think so. I think it's going to be what the fans want it to be. And if they want that, great. I think it's going to be that. But I don't think it's going to be a club that forces its identity onto the fans. I think that's the beauty of Forward is it was devised by the fans and wanted to be a reflection of Madison, which is that quirky, which is that weird, and which is that funny. Yeah. And I think the women's team will create its own identity within it. Like I think our supporter base will be slightly different for the women's team than the men's team. I think it's actually going to be bigger. If I had to guess, I think like, can you sell 8,000 tickets? Absolutely. You can sell 8,000 tickets. I think you're going to get a stronger campus response too. Hopefully from the student population for like a higher tier team, regardless yeah. of the league it's in. So I'm just so excited for that project. I mean, as soon as it was announced, the buzz around the office and everything has just been completely oh, yeah. different. Like everyone is so determined on doing everything possible to make sure that that happens.
That's so great. Totally other question related to the on the field product. How does the on field performance affect the mood in the front office? Are you guys like bummed after a loss or during?
Oh, yeah.
I know you kind of alluded to this that the grind to keep things up and to continue the social media stuff in the midst of a losing streak. I know there were several weeks last year where just podcasting was difficult. I can't imagine like going into work. So like how is this week a significantly different mood in the office than 2 weeks ago when we're losing three in a row?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the office rebounds so quickly. You have office people like Taylor Piper, who's like our sponsorship partnership lead, who is goofy as hell. And regardless of the result on a Monday morning will be, you know, like sneaking up behind you and giving you a wet willy or like chucking a ball at your head or something to get you out of a bad mood. Like it's just regardless of the result, like if it's a loss, absolutely. We'll feel that along with the fans that night. And I mean, you can see me when I come to the post game meetings, like I'm a little bit more somber on a loss.
Yeah. Versus
high-fiving
yeah.
on a win. Yeah. But I think like a lot of us are just fans, you know, like we're fans of the club, we're fans of soccer. We just happen to be working for the club. So like we feel that loss right with everyone else. But as club employees, we have to bounce back. Like we have to give a light at the end of the tunnel for fans and have this internal optimism for this team. And I think it's easy for us to do that because we genuinely love the guys. Like this group of guys this year is unlike any group I've ever experienced at Forward and really in soccer. Matt, at the end of the year last year, I know there was a lot of questions from fans, like, is he going to come back? Is he not going to come back after that, you know, rough end of the season last year?
Yeah.
And it was never a question for any of the front office members, because we're like, yeah, we trust Matt. We 100% know what he's about and know that he's trying to build something here. And so we were just more excited for next year to be like, not rub it in fans' faces and be like, hey, I told you so. You know, that's never effective. It's more just like, we believe and we're going to back him no matter what. Right. And so to be able to see what he's done this year and that get that Coach of the Month award, like, that was a bigger, like, it was not a big deal for him to win that. It was such a big deal for the front office for him to receive that, because we know the recognition that he deserves, and the entire coaching staff. Neil's been there from day one, you know,
his
inception. JP, incredible coach in his own right. And then you have legends, you know, in the coaching office as well. Yeah. It's just, it's so cool to see them get their flowers in some ways. And you know, they're not done yet. We have a lot of work to be done on the season, but it's been so, so fun to revel with this group of coaches and also this group of players. It's just like, you go into the office after a loss on a Monday morning, you expect the guys to be all downtrodden and stuff, and they're not. It's the energy is off the wall this year with this group. And I'm not just saying that, you know, as I'm leaving, it's just, it's completely unlike any group I've ever seen in terms of bouncing back from losses and just a hungry desire to beat teams, and not just beat them, but beat them down, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about it. And thank you for being here, and thank you for everything you've done for us, for the past couple of years. I can tell you that Andrew and Grant over at New Dog Magazine give me a hard time about being a journalist, you know, because I am. That's my job, and I try to keep this podcast as journalistically sound as possible. But I also understand that I'm a fan, so I hesitate to be like too up my own ass about it, but serious journalism and soccer. But in the media business, in journalism, and in fandom, frankly, like, access is just important, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that you know, access journalism is kind of a bad thing, right? For a number of reasons, but just for a professional football club, any professional sports team, any city council, any whatever, accessibility to the people is just super, super important. Right. And that has been a marker of this club since the very beginning. Like, before anything, I was having lunch over at the Jamaican place with Peter Wilt. Mm-hmm. You know, like, from the very beginning, the top people were always just available, and you've been very helpful in getting access to players, to answering questions. And I'm sure if you work in soccer, you'll continue to get this, but, you know, half hour before game time, you're trying to get things going. And this, what happened with, Aiden's ankle, you know, you get texts from random people, but you've, and I joked that, you know, when you were in England on your honeymoon, that I didn't bother you because I knew that if I did text you, you'd be like, let me find out for you.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to let him have his honeymoon. Right. So all this to say, it's been wonderful working with you the last couple of years, and I really appreciate it. And just wish you nothing but the best of luck. And you're going to hang out with me for a little bit here. We're going to talk some football. Let's speaking about it. A beatdown.
Let's do it.
One that we actually got one, a convincing win on Thursday, which was a refreshing change of pace.
Very much so. A much needed win.
Not only in just in points on the table, but just for the morale.
Yeah.
Of everybody, right? I assume, right? The Absolutely. Guys and us out here. Mm-hmm. But obviously, lots of changes in the lineup.
That was an understatement for Thursday. That was a crazy lineup.
It was kind of cobbled together, it felt like, in a way, because you had Christian Chaney out.
Yep.
For the red card, Morris Achero out for the red card, Timmy Mell out injured, right?
Correct. Still recovering day to day, right? Yep. Right.
Yeah. And Jaden, so he wasn't injured. He was there, wasn't he? I saw him at the stadium.
Yeah, but he was just away from the team for that game. So he'll be back Wednesday, and we're excited to have him back. So, yeah.
Yeah. But the good news was we did have Cello on the bench. speaking of Chaney, while I was discovering the couch, I was also walking through. There's a – folks, the fancy people over in the suites have a buffet.
They do.
Also. And I was like walking along and I see somebody. Now, we should mention on Thursday was the drip kits, right?
Yes.
Retro drip kits. Mm-hmm. So I see somebody at the buffet in a drip kit with the name Cheney on the back of it. I was like, how did somebody get a drip kit with Cheney on it?
Before oh, that's Matt.
Cheney. Right. So it's Christian Cheney there at the buffet wearing his own actual jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's not playing. I thought that was just legendary. And
if that doesn't describe Christian Cheney as a whole, that, yeah, that's Cheney.
Right. Like, I'm not playing, but I'm wearing my jersey as a fan of myself.
Uh-huh. Correct. Yeah. And the which team, was great. But mostly myself. Yep.
Yes. Yes. So anyway.
It's a striker's mentality, right? You have to 100%. Have that striker's mentality. 100%.
And he was giving, after the match, he was giving plenty of advice.
I'm sure.
To the guys on the sideline. It was great. So anyway, with all those changes, it shapes basically into kind of a back to basics 4-4-2, it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
But you put Derek Gebhardt and Nizem Bartman up top, which is Derek after the game was like, yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to play anyway.
Yep.
It's like, that's I'm an attacker anyway. So he was happy there.
Mm-hmm.
Wheels and De Silva on the wings. Ozzie Ramos, Aiden Macias. Talk about fortuitous timing to sign Ozzie Ramos.
Oh, my God. Right.
In the middle. And then Kroll and Brotherton, Osmond and Payne across the back. And Payne playing more defensively than he normally would. But again, absolutely. It was a sort of a back-to-basics formation. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to work, especially in the second half. The second half was overall much better. But that opening goal that we got, which was featured on the Twitter account, when playing it out of the back goes wrong.
Correct.
Which was great. but the thing is, it was a forced error, right?
It was.
And it was Richmond trying to play out of the back, Akira Fitzgerald, goes out to Connor Moran, and then Macias is like right up there on him.
Mm-hmm.
And while Macias is pestering the ball, Derek and Nazim are in the channels, like watching, like ready yep. to pounce. And Moran played it back to Fitzgerald, and Macias chased the ball back to Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald had to hurry the pass, try to get out to the wing, and Bartman's just grabbed it. And as soon as, and I was like standing on the corner down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, Derek's in the middle. Derek's in the middle. And Nazim just pops it right up, boop, and yep. and taps it in. After the match, during the press conference, as we're starting to talk to Derek, Keith T. Meyer's there, and he says, don't, like, this soccer thing is easy. I could have scored that goal. Like, don't right. make a big deal out of this goal.
No. But I will say, like, to counter Keith's point, everyone, I heard a lot after the game, they're like, oh, what a lucky goal. And I'm like, lucky to an extent, but at the same time, that high press is very intentional. And the channels yeah. that Nazim and Derek found themselves in to create that goal once that ball was turned over, that's yep. no fluke. Like, Derek was in his position to score. And I mean, that ball was popped up. And like, for Derek, yeah, it's an easy tap in, but you could have easily overthought that tap. Like, you've seen strikers.
Well, you could have overthought the pass.
Absolutely. Right. Well, you could have shot it. And so.
Right. Yeah. No, it was not. I mean, you joke about it because it looks easy, but it 100% is not as easy. And just to gain possession of the ball was not easy.
Yeah.
It was intentional. These guys have been doing that sort of high press at moments, right? Mm-hmm. They haven't been doing as quite as constantly or consistently as last year, but they're choosing their moments. And they chose that moment. And it worked. And what was really fascinating was almost recognizing how easy it looked. It was a pretty muted celebration.
And I think that that's one of the points that Matt was trying to focus on this week, you know, from the training sessions and from everything, is not to get complacent and not mm-hmm. to, you know, we're a team that has had leads throughout the year because we've been better than most sides we played, to be honest, you know? And I think with Kami, you know, if you score early, the tendency is to get comfortable with that lead and play a little different than what you're tactically set up to play. And mm-hmm. I think that muted celebration was, the job's not done. You know, it's 1-0, but this is a Richmond team that is leaking goals, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I think that was the focus from there on out.
Right. And that's exactly what the other after the celebration, all 10 field players got in a huddle
mm-hmm.
and Wheels was talking to him. Andrew Wheeler-Armin was preaching in there.
Yep.
And I asked Derek after the match what was being said. And that's exactly what was being said. It's like, we're not satisfied.
Yep.
We have a lead. We have an early lead. We have to keep it. We have to get more.
Yep. I don't want to belabor the point, but
yeah.
You spoke of Andrew Wheeler-Armin. What a transition for him this past match. Playing on the wing defensively, opposed to that midfield central, you know, defensive area that he normally covers. Absolutely incredible this past match. Absolutely incredible.
Yes, and I was actually going to mention him just in the first half especially. He was hustling. Like, he was focused. He was back. He looked to be, I mean, I know he's been injured and kind of touch and going in and out, but he looked really, really strong. And not only strong, but focused. Like, he knew the importance of this match.
Very much
and
so.
Had to do, and he did it. And like you said, out of position, but just entirely willing to go all in, you know, wherever he was needed, which is great. Now, after conceding that goal, Richmond did kind of grow into it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because they, I mean, they do have some weapons, right? Byrne had to make two really great saves, which he did.
Yep.
As he does. But the back line was good. It was better than it's been lately. Mm-hmm. They looked like the back line of the previous, of the early part of the season, right?
I agree. I think that that was one more week of practice that Sam had
with.
Yeah. And like everyone around the club is aware that Sam is an incredibly talented defender, but you go most of the season subbing in and then you're asked to play in that starting 11 consistently in a, you know, really Matt asks a lot of that back line on a consistent basis. Yeah. And so now it's not a normal center back ask, you know? And so you really have to get used to what it means to be a center back in his system. And I think Sam is now fully, you know, match fit one, but also cognizant of the system that he's playing in. And now you're seeing the ability kind of shine through.
Yeah. Because they did have the two chances, but most of the time Richmond did have the bulk of the possession in the first half, but wasn't able to do a hell of a lot with it just because of that back line. And Byrne did have those two great saves, one on a header. The Justin Sucro had a chance, one moment when Neil Vigneault dribbled kind of right at our back line and our guys kind of collapsed on the ball a little bit and left Suco out on his own unmarked. One moment, one little lapse, but we'll take it because Byrne made the save. Neil Vigneault had, speaking of him, he had a great chance that went just wide, but I think Byrne had it covered. If it had been on target, Byrne would have had it. So, And what was interesting is I thought the first half was fine. I thought it was, you know, you get a goal up, you don't concede, you look strong defensively. Byrne makes a couple of great saves. But after the match, everybody I talked to, Matt, Aiden, and Derek, all said that first half was not good.
Right.
Like, it wasn't good, which speaks to what you were saying before, but they just weren't satisfied.
No.
But they were very satisfied, and as we all were, with the second half.
Right.
Right, which begins with a goal. Which is great. This might be my favorite goal of the season.
Really?
One of them, certainly top three or four, probably.
Yeah.
The save penalty going the other way.
Yeah, that was electric.
That's like all-timer.
Yeah, right. Coming out of half, up 1-0, you don't want Richmond to be on that front foot.
And, at all.
I mean, you close the door right off the bat.
Well, Richmond didn't even touch the ball.
No.
Mm-mm. I counted because this is the kind of nerd I am. 18 consecutive passes coming off the restart.
It's nuts.
Over the course of not quite a minute. Richmond never touched the ball before it's in the back of the net, which is just, like you say, such a statement to come out of the half. Like, okay, we know that the last 20 minutes of that last half was not good enough. And so we need one more goal and we're just going to go get it. And the way they did it was what the one of the reasons it's one of my favorite goals is that's the kind of thing that this team can do, and I want to see them do it more. And the one thing they've kind of gotten away from is that direct, tight space, quick passing.
Right.
Right. And so the last sequence was it got back to Osmond, to Da Silva, to Macias, to Bartman, to Macias. Right. To Gebhardt, to Da Silva, to Gebhardt, to Macias. It's the real basic U12 give and go that creates the space, right? And it's so fundamental because it works,
right?
And once you get Richmond skating backwards, like they're never going to catch up. And Macias and the intelligence of Aiden to see that Pierre De Silva and Derek Ebhardt are doing the give and go, and I'm going to continue my run forward. That the sort of off the ball movement was so perfect. And Derek took the one touch and slid it right to him. And then Macias to have the class to finish it in the flock end. You couldn't ask for anything more.
Right. So now what I'm going to be looking forward on Wednesday, and I'm curious about, is that a result of, you know, not having a true striker on the pitch at the time? Because like you have Derek, yeah, and Nazim more of a striker than Derek, but still, like I would love to see that continue when Chaney and when Mauro go back on the pitch, because oftentimes what I've seen this year is, you know, you rely on Chaney as that target striker, and that ball gets fed into him, and then really it's up to him to decide what to do with it, whether it be shoot or pass. Right. But that when he does pass it, it rarely moves as, you know, fluidly as it did in that one sequence. Yeah. And I think they found that measure to be like, all right, we have something here, and Chaney, yeah, can feed right into it. Absolutely. Cause he's as selfless as they come from a striker perspective, but you can't just rely on one person to create all of your attacking chances.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. But I mean, he could have easily been in on any of that sequence. Right.
Like, absolutely.
And he would have been in, but then and then once you get that 2-goal lead, which is, we know, the most dangerous lead in soccer, mm-hmm, but we did dominate the rest of the match, locked it down. You could tell the swagger was there. You could tell the confidence was there.
Should have been three or four.
I know. We ended up with 7 more shots. Derek had one saved. Mm-hmm. Derek hit the post.
Ugh. Once. And you wanted that one to go in so badly for him. I mean, it would have been, he would have gone nuts.
He would have, like, he was in a pretty good mood after this one, but
his ass off. Oh my God.
Yeah, he does. And he's so, like, I don't know. He's really just dedicated himself to this club, which has been really great to see. He's the new, yeah, like Mr. Mingo, right? You know?
Absolutely.
And so to get him one more goal would have been terrific, but I mean, and he created that chance more or less himself, and mm-hmm, that would have been such a nice finish. But, so we did have, we finished with 12 shots, only 2 from outside the box, mm-hmm, which is cool, which tells you that we're getting close, right? Right. We're able to get movement in the opponent's box and get close, which is important. Only 3 of those shots were on target.
Yeah.
So you had the 2 goals and then the one that Fitzgerald saved on Derek, but so the little room for improvement there. To your point about the way we were passing, the way we were approaching, without Chaney, we only had 5 crosses.
Yeah, match. Which is it was a very different style. It was way more, yeah, direct than we're used.
Way
to.
More direct,
and it worked. I mean, like, we knew Richmond was coming into that game not wanting to possess the ball and beat us on the counter. They're not a team that, yeah, likes to possess. Which is odd for a Richmond team. You know, you're used to watching Richmond of old and loving to possess, feed it into Terzaghi, and then it's a goal. And without him, they don't really have much of a soul, you know, to kind of go off of there. And yeah, so I think the coaching staff did a great job prepping for that game and seeing the deficiencies in that, mm-hmm, midfield, and really just being confident in Aiden and Andrew carrying the ball versus playing it to a winger, yeah, to then whip it in.
Right. Right. Well, and that's also actually a good point that the early in the sequence of that second goal was Aiden carrying the ball.
Right.
Yep. He had a few touches forward before he made that pass, mm-hmm, which then set up the whole sequence. Now, maybe the best news is we haven't conceded a goal in 192 minutes.
Rough couple of games there.
After 11 goals in 3 matches, you think the wheels have come off? Our back line has got the yips. They've collapsed,
right?
They've forgotten how to do it, or more likely, like, the other teams have figured it out.
Yeah,
what
was weird in that that couple weeks where those 11 goals happen is you'd see them come out to training, you know, after, and you'd think Mitch, being the captain, would be laying in and really putting down his foot and being like, hey guys, we need to be doing better. It was the same confident Mitch and the same confident backline that you saw early on in the year when Byrne was pitching shutouts like no other. It was, they knew that it was more of a fluke than anything. Mm-hmm. And that while they were bad performances, that better performances were on the horizon. So I think that kind of speaks to this confidence of this group. They're not fazed by those kind of fluke games. And I mean, we've had our fair share of them this year, but we've bounced back unlike any years before, you know?
Yeah. And that's been a common theme is the resilience, right? The resilience, not only from game to game, but within a game. And this game was both. Mm-hmm. Honestly, you're coming off a tough, rough patch. You get a hard fought 0-0 draw that you feel like you probably could have won. And then you get this kind of performance, not only a 2-0 win, but you also get a 45 minutes that where you feel subpar and you come back from that, score right away, and then clamp it down and win pretty convincingly. I mean, the rest of that match was pretty convincing in terms of, you look back at the stats, which it's a little bit hard sometimes to predict what the stats are actually going to be, but we did end up with the bulk of possession, 53%. Mm-hmm. 82% passing accuracy, which is a little bit on the low side for us, frankly. Yeah. But our FOTMOB stats are like off the charts.
That was the best FOTMOB stats I've ever seen from
the only guy on our side that was under 7, who was not the little green bubble on FOTMOB, was Stephen Payne. And I think that's because he's being asked to do a different role than he normally
does. He was way more defensive than normal, and he played the role really well. Right.
He did. He did. And the guy that appears as Silva on the wing, which would have been normally more his role, was at a 7.4. Derek had 8.7, which is, I think that might be the highest score I've seen all season.
I saw Chaney. Chaney posted one better on that one game where he scored 2 and then should have had a 3rd. You plug Derek and Nazim up top, and I'm sure, Matt and the coaching staff have high hopes, but you never quite know. And boy, did that work well. I mean, I think that also speaks to this is their second year playing together. And so there's a certain level of trust there, and understanding runs. And I mean, Derek knows that field like no other, having now been, longest tenured Flamingo. So
yeah,
well-deserved FUTMOB score for him.
Yeah. He and Jacob Kroll both make team of the week, which is fantastic. Jake had a pretty good night. Defensively, particularly. So where that leaves us now, let's kind of run around. Anything else you want to say about the match? And it was very good mood in the forward club.
Really good mood in the forward club. Team was buzzing. Coaching staff was buzzing. Front office was buzzing. As a front office, you get a little tense as it gets to September, thinking of past Septembers. And so this was a release more than anything. It was we're all right. It's not over yet. And this team is far from done, but it was regardless of what happens the rest of the way, it was a good, just break.
Yeah. So now do you watch the other games then on the weekend, or is it like work?
Yeah, no, I'm a fiend for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to talk to the other games of the weekend, and you can feel free to jump in anytime. But Tormenta goes to North Carolina and beats them 3-2. Late drama keeps the defending champions playoff hopes alive. Makwele Akale scores first for Tormenta. Really nice scissor kick goal. If you check out the highlight, that was a nice one. Raheem Somersol leveled it from distance for North Carolina just after halftime. And then Oleks Anderson gives them the lead on the hour mark. Jackson Corey gets it back level for Tormenta. Kingsford Ajay, massive goal, 4 minutes into stoppage time. Keziah Sterling with an assist of the week candidate with his chest on that one, which is fantastic. Tormenta gets all 3 points there. Omaha get their, is it 9 in row now?
It's nine and probably 10. This run has been nuts.
It's been crazy. Omaha 3-2 over Chattanooga. 9th consecutive win. 3 goals all in the first half. Steven Dos Santos, Marco Milanese on a sumptuous backheel from JP Scarce. And then Joe Brito. Red Wolves did get one from Riley Kraft in that first half. Went down a man, a straight red to Manuel Madrid in the 58th. Studs up tackle, no question about that one. Yep. But even down a man, Chattanooga did get one back late from Papa Mensa just to make things interesting, but it wasn't enough. Greenville 1-0 over Knoxville. These are all it's four games on Saturday where the away team, I'm just realizing this, every game on Saturday the away team won.
Mm-hmm.
1-0 over Knoxville. Ilian Ilitch doinked a penalty for off the post for Knoxville on the 5th minute, and Leo Castro scored for Greenville, and with that one goal, Chattanooga, Central Valley, and who else was eliminated?
Richmond's close to Richmond. Game, yeah, right.
Yeah, Richmond, Chattanooga, Central Valley, all eliminated with that Greenville win. Mm-hmm.
It's weird. I will say it's weird to see Richmond not in that playoff picture.
It is strange. Yeah.
Just consistently in there, and I don't know what happened this year, whether it be injuries or what, but yeah, it's weird to see them not. And they were, they had a good start to the year too, like a decent start. At least.
Getting 0 points against Madison hurts.
It does. A Henny Dipper sweep.
Getting swept.
I was saying goodbyes in the flock end, and Kyle Carr and Chris Fox pull me aside, and they're like, "Hey, man, this is going to be the weirdest question you get all night, but do you have a broom?" And I said, "Do I have a broom, or does the club?" And they're like, no, it's the club. I'm not going to ask you. And I'm like, okay, yeah. And they're like, go into the storage area and find us a broom. And I was like, okay, sounds good. So I found a broom, and groundskeeper and brilliant, Bree Stevensfield employee sees me taking it out of the shed, and he's like, "What are you doing with a broom?" I was like, "Nah, it's for something. You'll trust the product. I don't want to jinx anything. So like, I'm just carrying your broom." And he goes, "As long as it comes back and no one gets hit over the head with it, I'm fine." And I was like, "Okay, sounds good." So there's I think Featherstone took a picture with them with the broom on the pitch.
And I took a video walking across the flock end during stoppage time, and they were singing "Old Madison." And I did catch Kyle at the very end of that video with the broom. So check the Talk and Flock Twitter account.
Yep, yep.
Northern Colorado goes to Central Valley because Fresno gets a 2-0 win there. Trevor Amon, penalty early, gets his 20th goal of the season, league record.
Man.
Insane. Marky Hernandez got a banger, added on a banger just before halftime.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting about this match, we're playing Northern Colorado tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Bruno Rendon will not be with the club because he got a red card, the stupidest red card of the season.
Yeah, I didn't really understand that one. Not that it was a bad red card, just like why? You know, why are you doing that?
Well, he didn't waste that much time. Like he was on yellow. He's taking the throw in. He's like looking around. You know how people do. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that late in the match where time wasting was a factor anyway.
No, but if you're on a yellow, why are you doing that? You know, and like, why are you giving USL League One refs any sort
any
of
excuse
like,
to set you up?
Yeah, right.
Just, I mean, you're right, 100%. But I don't know. It felt a little soft to me, but yeah. Anyway, he did eventually take the throw, and as soon as he threw it in, they blew the whistle, gave him a second yellow for time wasting. So he will not be with them unless it gets rescinded. Which I don't know if it will or not. I doubt it.
No.
But also Ayman Zayed then offered some constructive feedback on the call, and then he was shown a straight red, which was pretty remarkable. He must have said something
pretty egregious.
Yeah. Pretty egregious to get a straight red for the bench. So I guess he won't be in Madison tonight either.
Those two reds play a big, big role in tonight's match. You think, I mean, like, they're a team that doesn't switch that starting 11 that often, and they are very tried and true in what their ways are. And to have that happen, I mean, and to have Madison now regaining form and fitness, like it could swing that much.
And then finally on Sunday, this is also a big result for Madison. Lexington and Charlotte played with 2-2 draw. This is the first match for Nacho Novo, the new gaffer for Lexington. Sam Stocky is now the full-time sporting director for Lexington. Gabriel Oberton opens the scoring for Charlotte. Pierre Manet. What's that? Oh yeah, that was a banger. That was an incredible goal. As they mentioned as often as they possibly can on ESPN Plus that Gabriel Oberton used to play for Manchester United.
Correct.
And so, that looked like a goal by someone who used to play for Manchester United.
The David Beckham effect, yeah.
Which is great, yeah. Pierre Manet leveled it on the hour mark for Charlotte. Joel Johnson scored for the wrong team. Gabe Lutz in the lead with an own goal. And then Dane Kelly levels it in the 72nd, shares the points. What that does for Madison is keeps fourth place within reach.
Does. That was a huge result.
Huge result for us. With that draw, Charlotte sits in fourth place with 44 points. Madison is in fifth with 41.
Correct.
And we have a game in hand.
Correct. And if you look at that, I believe seventh and eighth place right now, we also have a game in hand on. And so it's good for moving up, and it's also good for that bubble at the bottom.
For not being overtaken. Correct. That's exactly right. Yep. So what that means is, and we play Northern Colorado. We play without Bruno Rendon tonight. Mm-hmm. This was a match that I had kind of circled on my calendar when Northern Colorado seemed unbeatable.
Right.
Earlier in the season. They had a stumble, but they're looking very much back in form right now. So we will see. But if we can get a win at home against Northern Colorado, then we go to Charlotte on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Well, Charlotte sits idle at midweek. So that, if we're able to get any result, even if we get a draw
right
tonight, that there could be a home playoff game on the line Saturday in Charlotte.
And what's interesting is you went into that match last Thursday not really knowing what that table was going to look like after the match,
right,
and that win, and then this weekend's results, it kind of shifts the men. And I don't know if it shifts the mentality for the team necessarily, but from a fan perspective, it's a very good way to go into these matches of, rather than worrying about that playoff line, you're more worried about, can this team perform against other playoff teams? Like, these are the true tests of, like, what is this team made out of? Because it's not about just making the playoffs at this point, it's making a deep run into that playoffs. And so, can you beat a Northern Colorado at home when you're expected to win? Can you go to Charlotte on a quick midweek turnaround and beat a Charlotte team that is flying right now and capture that fourth place spot and a home playoff game?
Yeah, because as you say, these are the teams you're going to have to beat in the playoffs.
Yep.
So why not beat them now?
Exactly. Right. You don't want to come into the playoffs having not beaten that team recently and try to have that chip on your shoulder mentality. It's the playoffs. You don't want to have that.
Right. And a sort of a quirk of the schedule is we actually have two games left of our last five games. Two of them are against Northern Colorado.
Right.
One here and one there. Mm-hmm. So we have Northern Colorado tonight, Charlotte on Saturday, and then it's just Saturdays the rest of the time. So then it's home against Lexington, at Northern Colorado, and we finish home against Omaha, which is very likely to be a pretty meaningful game. I think I'm not sure anything will be entirely settled by then. Mm-hmm. I think there will still be some positioning, and it is still very possible that we can entirely, fall apart and fall out of the playoffs, but it's feeling less likely right now.
Correct.
Because as you say, we've got 5 points and a game in hand on seventh place, Knoxville.
Yeah, and regardless of the table and the point differential too, I think it just, you kind of feel this too, Rob. I think this team just feels different than teams in the past in terms of that resiliency and that punchback after a loss, where you just don't really anticipate a slide,
Right, and I'm not seeing heads hanging. I'm not seeing I'm sure somebody's saying, but there's not a lot of fire the coach on social media right now,
which is quite nice to see for once.
Yeah, we have a few. There's a few serial complainers, but but that's part of the fun.
I don't have to have my Reddit /ForwardMadison notifications on right now, which is quite nice.
Good thinking.
Yes.
All right. So before we finish up here, I think I will not be at the game tonight. Mm-hmm. I'm celebrating my mom's birthday, so I'll probably be able to watch TV at the second. I'll watch the second half on ESPN. But so, listener, expecting you to hold it down, expecting you to be the 12th man to get the guys across the line. Again, a draw tonight is an acceptable result in terms of the table.
Yep.
A win, obviously, is 1,000 times better. And we needed 12 points out of the last six matches. I think 10 out of these last five is going to do the trick to get in the playoffs. But as you say, it's not just about getting in right now. It's about getting a home game. It's about making the semifinals and maybe further. So we will, we'll keep going.
Yeah, I would say if you're going to the game tonight, it is a Wednesday night. It is a midweek match. Midweek matches tend to be a little sleepy. This is not a match to be sleepy at. This is a match to you want to go home without a voice at. This is one that the guys, I mean, you kind of saw how they responded to that energy on Thursday night. That was an unprecedented energy for a midweek game last Thursday night. That crowd was into it. And so these guys responded the energy in the stadium. And it's true that that 12th man makes a difference. And so if you're in the stadium, it's bark in the park night. So have your dog, squeeze your dogs a little bit to make them a little howl.
And let's not another fact that Northern Colorado, despite a little bit of a stumble the last several weeks, is in first place on the table. Like,
right.
And every time we've hosted the top of the table team, we've beaten them this season twice. That's happened twice, right?
This is a proven match.
This is the that's very well said. This is the prove it match that you got the draw. Then you got the win. Now prove that it's not a fluke. Prove that that you are a playoff team, and that you're a team to be feared as we all push into the postseason. Evan Warwick, thank you again so much for being here. This is really a lot of fun, and thanks for all the work you've done in these last few years. And best of luck. And let us know how do people follow you? What's your at? Yeah.
My ad is Evan Warwick 55 on Twitter. I am on Twitter. Well, I'm on X. I'm Xing all the time. So feel free to follow me there. I will not be a stranger. My wife and I will be in the flock end tonight for the match, and then we'll just get through the rest of the season.
All right. Talk of Flock is a production of Soda Soccer Network, produced by Jeremy Rushing, hosted by me, Rob Chappell, and co-hosted ably tonight by Evan Warwick. Evan, thank you so much. Have a great week, everybody. See you tonight.